Hello, everyone, and welcome to Health or Consequences, the Massachusetts Health Policy Podcast by Commonwealth Magazine and Mass Inc. I'm your co-host, John McDonough, from the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, and I'm joined by my erstwhile colleague, Paul Hattis, from the Lown Institute. And we are talking today about the Health Equity Compact, which is a new coalition of over 50 Black and Latinx leaders across Massachusetts healthcare, from hospitals, health centers, payers, academic institutions, public health, to advance health equity in Massachusetts. They have advanced legislation that is now before the House and the Senate, an act to advance health equity. And so we invited the coalition to send two of their leaders to talk with us in this program today about the legislation and the coalition and the broader issues that are trying to be addressed. And so let me introduce both of them. So Myesha Minter-Jordan is the president and CEO of the CareQuest Institute for Oral Health. She's a physician, a business executive, and former chief medical officer and CEO of the Dimmock Center, one of the largest community health centers in Massachusetts. She has an incredible reputation and footprint across Massachusetts healthcare. And it's a pleasure to welcome you, Myesha, to joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
And then we're happy to be joined by Juan Fernando Lopera. He is the first Chief Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Officer of Beth Israel Lahey Health. He formerly was the business diversity officer at Point 32, which was the merger of Tufts Health Plan and Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare. And before that, he was also director of affordability strategies at Massachusetts Blue Cross and Blue Shield, and previously worked at Deloitte Consulting. So welcome, Juan.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Paul, for having me.
So we're excited to have both of you, and I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Paul, for our first question.
Thanks, John. Let me offer my own words of welcome to you, Juan and Myesha. Thank you for joining us today. Now, the two of you are 50 leaders who are part of a Massachusetts organization that came together called the Health Equity Compact. Can you tell our audience a bit about the compact, what it is, why was it formed, and some of your hopes?
Absolutely. Thank you, Paul, again. As COVID took its toll on our communities and we saw such a disproportionate impact, many of us decided it was time for there to be a systemic change in our healthcare delivery system. We knew that the system was failing our underrepresented communities, our Black and Brown communities, and that there needed to be a systems change to address those issues. So at the same time, you know, it was, as you'd recall, summer of 2020, with the murder of George Floyd, there was increased interest in addressing racial injustice. And clearly we saw it in healthcare as, again, the pandemic took its toll. So a number of us started getting together and connecting on this topic, and there are many of us who have been working on this for a very long time, and really saw the opportunity to seize this moment to bring about the type of change that was needed. So a number of us started connecting. I connected with folks like Dr. Myesha Minter-Jordan here, connected with Michael Curry, president of the Mass League, connected with Jeffrey Sanchez, former chair of the Ways and Means Committee. Connected with my counterpart at MGB, Dr. Elsie Taveras, connected with our good friend Manny Lopes at Blue Cross in his executive role there. Kane Hayes at Point 32 Health, the new CEO there, Kevin Churchwell. So there was a number of us in positions of influence with lived experience who said, you know, that we can actually collectively come together and make an impact, make a change. We have seen Massachusetts lead the way in health reform. So we were sort of taking a page from that book of Chapter 58 in 2006 with universal coverage, Chapter 224 around cost containment. And we said the next chapter should be about health equity, and it should be one that is led by those of us with lived experience. You know, I, for one, and all of us have our own story, but I, for one, I'm originally from Colombia, came to this country at a young age, for a long time was undocumented. So got to see firsthand how healthcare just did not work for me and my family when there was an immigration status issue, when we didn't speak the language, when we were predisposed to chronic conditions, all of those conditions that created kind of that perfect storm of what we saw during COVID in communities like Chelsea, Roxbury, East Boston. So that was really the spirit of this group coming together, leveraging, again, our lived experience, leveraging our positions of influence to make systemic change through these deeply rooted health disparities that exist and have existed and persisted in healthcare.
So this is a noteworthy coalition that's come together under this. And for folks who are interested, you can go to healthequitycompact.org if you want to know it. I've rarely seen such a collection of leaders from across the state interested in diversity and equity come together in this way. And you've already jumped into action by filing legislation, as I mentioned, in the House and the Senate, an act to advance health equity. I'm wondering, Maisha, if you can tell us, what is the compact trying to accomplish with this new legislation, and what are some of its most important provisions?
Thank you for the question. So, you know, as Juan mentioned, we're really building off of the strong foundation of health equity work that has been occurring here in the Commonwealth. It's not surprising, the Commonwealth has always been a leader and has paved the way for healthcare transformation through many of the things that Juan has already mentioned. We're applying the same level of innovation, commitment, and shared responsibility in an effort to achieve an equitable future for all Massachusetts residents. So we've been able to move very quickly to action because the work that has already been done by so many, we're building off of that. And this piece of legislation is evidence of that. We partnered with some incredible champions of the Compact's mission, including Senator Pavel Payano, Senator Liz Miranda, Representative Bud Williams, and Representative Judith Garcia to file a bill that, once passed, will advance health equity in three major ways. The first is by prioritizing health equity in state government. Second is by standardizing and reporting on health equity data. And third is by improving access to and the quality of care. There are specific proposals that fall within these three categories, but I do want to touch on an important theme that's throughout all of them. And that theme is shared responsibility. We know that the work isn't easy. We know that we have centuries of structural injustice to unwind. We also know that achieving health equity requires shared responsibility across nearly every sector to address the underlying social, economic, and environmental factors that shape our healthcare. And so this bill demands that kind of social and shared responsibility. It builds on and seeks to codify components of the MassHealth 1115 waiver, which prioritizes integrated value-based care and accessibility, maintains near universal insurance coverage, and addresses health-related social needs. And it does this through a whole person, whole health lens that's inclusive of all aspects of a patient's body. In my current work, we're focused on oral health. So we make sure that oral health, vision, behavioral health are all key components as to how we think about healthcare holistically. So we're really excited to be able to put forth something that is much more comprehensive in nature, that speaks to the very elements that we know contribute to health inequities, and to have such incredible support at this early juncture. And this is driven, as you have already said, by healthcare leaders who believe in this work, who have dedicated their lives to this work, and who are living and breathing this work every day.
Oh, thanks so much for the overview. I think John and I want to dig into maybe some of the details a bit, if we could. Yep. Some of the provisions, as we've looked at them, don't appear to be heavy lifts, such as creating a health equity position in the Massachusetts Health Policy Commission. But others do appear to be heavier and perhaps more complex or longer term in order to implement. Do you, either one of you, have any sense at this point which the provisions may be the most difficult or controversial as you've thought about it?
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that question. So as Maisha mentioned, the bill by design is intended to be very comprehensive. You know, we talked a lot about, are we trying to boil the ocean? And the reality is, yes, we are. We need to boil the ocean in order to address deeply rooted systemic disparities in healthcare. We think of this as a omnibus type bill, very comprehensive. And as Maisha mentioned, with a high degree of shared responsibility, it is the only way to really address these deeply rooted, longstanding disparities. But we know, like other chapters of reform, that there needs to be that common theme around shared responsibility, and there needs to be a little bit for everybody to contribute to this. And also a lot of give and take. We know that filing the bill was just the start of a conversation, quite frankly, and that there are elements that need to be improved upon. There are elements that are very complicated to sort out. Two examples I'll give is the, what do we do about the rising out-of-pocket costs that we know have an outsized impact on individuals with chronic conditions like diabetes, asthma. And we know that those chronic conditions disproportionately impact our low-income communities, our communities of color. We also know, as Maisha already mentioned, need to spend more on whole person care. You know, our system is designed to spend more on curing diseases and much less on preventing. But it's very complicated to figure out how to spend more in primary care, behavioral health, oral health, in a fiscally responsible way. We know we have to do it figuring out how to, I think, is some of the complexities of the bill. The good thing about the compact is that we've had a great exchange of ideas, feedback, to continue to shape and to iterate on the bill. And we received broad-based support from all the stakeholders involved in the compact, and pleased to see the bill sponsorship from the House and the Senate as well.
So let me, if I could, on one provision in particular that just strikes me as I look at it, and that's Section 42, where basically you provide entitlement to insurance coverage in Massachusetts for undocumented immigrants, which I think is a really laudable idea. Just can't help reflecting from prior years when I was in the Massachusetts legislature, when I worked in DC during the ACA process, that was a kind of a third rail issue. You may recall when Obama gave a speech to Congress for in behalf of the ACA, and he said, and this bill will not provide any coverage for undocumented immigrants. And he was confronted by one representative from South Carolina yelling, "You lie." This was just a hot button issue. But we've now seen in recent years, we've seen California and New Mexico, among others, have stepped forward and offered coverage using state only and no federal dollars. What's the thinking behind this provision, and how important is it? And do you expect a lot of controversy about this one?
Yeah, it is something that we need to address. I mean, we pay for it one way or another, right? People end up resorting to emergency departments to seek care if someone's undocumented, because they don't have comprehensive coverage to have primary care. So it's something that if other states have figured it out, I think we can as well. I'll point to a recent legislation that approved and now is being implemented. We were able to figure out how to get driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants. I know that expanding Medicaid for undocumented immigrants has a fiscal and a budgetary impact that we need to size, and as is the case with many other aspects of the bill, we need to size it. But we think it is a human right to provide health insurance. We know in certain communities, if we think about Chelsea, at one point the epicenter of COVID in terms of its disproportionate impact, and there were many compounding factors, but one of those compounding factors was undocumented immigrant status. You know, the census tells us there's about 40,000 people who live there, but we really know there's more like 60 or 70,000. So it's no surprise that people were concerned about showing up to get their COVID vaccine because of their immigration status. So we pay for it one way or another. We pay for it with many people's lives. We also pay for it fiscally in terms of people having to resort to emergency departments. So it is something that we should, you know, how can we as a health equity compact comprised of leaders, Black and Latinx leaders, not think about this key issue, which impacts many, many in our communities. And it's very personal to so many of us, as I shared personally earlier. You know, it was I was one of those families at one point, now a proud U.S. citizen, but at one point you could not get insurance, had to, you know, I did rely on places like where Maisha used to work, DMIG, to where I could go for care because they wouldn't ask for my status, but there were limits to what I could have, and that impacted our health.
So has your coalition or any other group looked at your legislation and done any kind of fiscal or financial analysis of how much it would cost, which is always one of the first questions that legislators will want to know as they take a look at this?
Yeah, so so that is part of the process that we'll be embarking in as part of you know, provisions like the one we just talked about, sizing the cost of expanding Medicaid coverage. That's part of the process of what we will be, the compact, along with the bill sponsors, will be doing next. So that piece has yet to be completed.
Okay.
Dr. Minter-Jordan, let's assume that the compact's bill becomes law as your group has currently proposed, and direct state agencies to develop and track progress with equity-related metrics and measures. Are there any specific ones in mind that you would want to point to indicate success or failure? And how long would it take probably for those measures to indicate some of that?
No, thank you for the question. You know, what we say very often is you can't improve what you don't measure. And we know that measurement isn't an endpoint. It's about how we leverage the data along the way to be able to gain insights, to take action, to direct our resources. So I think that success will mean that we have the data that we need in an ongoing way, that we're standardizing the collection and reporting of data from every corner of healthcare, and that we're generating the right insights that let us know where we're making progress and where we're not. Data will be essential to evaluating progress, to comparing results year over year, and we'll be looking at several key metrics, including health outcomes, access, quality of care, cost of care, and ultimately we want that data to inform and drive effective public policy. But we know that this isn't something that's going to happen overnight. It'll take a commitment from state government, from payers, from providers, and from communities. And one of the things that makes our compact members so special, in addition to the various ways in which we lead in our various sectors, is this commitment to data and the commitment to data collection. I'm really excited about, that was one of the first things that we started to talk about, was how do we make sure we have the data? And by ensuring that we're putting that into the policies that we're advancing, we know we're going to get there, and it'll help us, just as we did with COVID-19, when we began to get much more serious about the ways in which we were collecting data by neighborhood, by every facet of the community, to be able to understand where to direct resources. We want to do a very similar thing with this work to ensure that we're really pushing the needle on equity.
Juan, any thoughts you have about this data metrics issue?
Yes, I think it is one of the most critical and foundational components. And, you know, we often let perfection get in the way of progress, and while we may not have completeness of all demographic data, we have enough to get started and to begin to set goals for ourselves as a Commonwealth and all the key components of our healthcare system in the Commonwealth. We know how to do that for other aspects of healthcare. If I think about how we measure total cost of care, quality of care, we can and should do something similar to that, where we come up with some sort of composite of the health equity of the Commonwealth, and then be able to measure ourselves in the years to come and hold that degree of accountability for progress to see if all the individual components that make up that composite are turning into the progress that we're seeking. I know, Paul, you have experience because the Lowen Institute does something similar. What hasn't been done yet that I think we would love to see is some sort of composite health equity index that, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We already know how to measure quality of healthcare, but what we don't do enough of is stratify it by race, ethnicity, and other demographics, and then come up with some sort of composite that tells us where we are now and where we should aim to be in 5 years and 10 years. And that way we can measure the impact of all the great things that are happening, such as the 1115 waiver, such as some of the private payers that are beginning to pay for equity improvement. So we're very excited about that component of what we're trying to do here with this bill, and the broader work of the compact is being able to measure the impact of all these efforts in a way that allows us to set goals.
We follow up, if I could, for either one of you in this area. You know, some have suggested in our state, which has been active at times, our providers have in the mergers and acquisitions or better ambulatory care expansion or service line closure kinds of issues. And I know both of you have been involved in our marketplace. You're saying before those things happen, maybe some of the data we ought to look at is sort of projections about will any of those things affect populations or worsen inequities, you know, before the transaction. Any thought about whether that ought to be part of the metric and measurement process that maybe our state utilizes, Health Policy Commission or some other agency?
Yeah, I mean, I think this, what we're talking about here calls for there to be an equity lens on anything that has to do with the healthcare system. And that should take into account how the healthcare system continues to evolve, continues to contract, expand, whatever the case may be. There are implications to communities, and I think we should know what they are.
So we've focused in our conversation around the new compacts legislation before the House and the Senate now, wondering about, does the compact have a focus above and beyond the legislation itself? Do you have other goals and efforts that you're pursuing? And if the legislation succeeds and gets implemented, is that it for the compact, or is this a longer term organization that we should expect to see and hear from over a much longer period than just during this legislative process?
You know, this work is never going to be, something that's short term. It requires long-term commitment, investment, measurement, and accountability. And so we're in this for the long haul. We know that there's a lot of work already happening within the Commonwealth, and beyond that, we can leverage our Commonwealth as a leader to become a leader in health equity, a leader for the rest of the country. We're going to see this bill through the legislative process, evaluate the results, provide ongoing recommendations, and continue to pivot and evolve as the work continues to evolve. But as we started off in this conversation, we know that there have been decades of systemic injustice that we're really trying to unravel by getting to the deep root causes. And by looking at these systemic causes, the work is going to be extensive. And so we're in it for the long haul. We know it requires a long-term commitment, and we're excited to be able to do that with the incredible leaders that we have as part of the compact and many of the allies that we have as our representatives. Juan, I'll also turn it to you.
Yeah, thank you. When the group came together, our end game was not, quite frankly, legislation. That was a component. There's a lot more to what we're trying to accomplish within our own organizations that compact members represent, the advocacy we could do outside of legislation, the type of convening that we need to do in community, and that includes the communities we come from. It includes the business community, it includes a number of other stakeholders. an example of additional activity that the compact is involved with is the development of a Massachusetts specific cost of inequity report. And we're excited to be partnering with the Blue Cross Foundation on doing this this analysis so that we can actually quantify, you know, we can look at the data from a clinical standpoint and see the disparities. And I think that'll move a lot of people, but we need to move everybody. And I think to move everybody, we need also the cost side of the equation, the business case, to put it maybe that bluntly, of why we need to do this work. So we're pretty excited about that cost of inequity report that I think will allow us to engage in conversations with the broader business community. Everybody should care about the impact of health disparities to our Commonwealth and be activated to contribute to the change that the compact is seeking.
Is there a way for people who are not part of your compact's network to be involved and to be connected to your work and maybe even be supportive of it?
Definitely. I mean, as you mentioned, our website earlier, healthequitycompact.org, we certainly want people to take a look at that and learn about the bill and talk to your representatives. We want to make sure that all representatives, not those who just supported our bill, are supportive of what we're trying to do. And we should be asking questions because I think, you know, as a physician, we've learned more than anything else through the pandemic that the health and welfare of people around us impacts us. And so if we are not sort of lifting up all boats, as the saying goes, then we're doing ourselves a disservice. We're still paying for it, as Juan has already indicated. And so we need to make sure that we're using our dollars wisely and that we're allocating resources appropriately. And so we anticipate that we'll have many, many allies as we continue to do this work together that will be asking questions of the people that represent us in legislature, but also understanding the ways in which within their own companies, they can begin to look at health equity and the disparities amongst their employees or within the different organizations with whom they affiliate.
Yeah, and while the group, I'll just add that while the group was very intentional in having it be Black and Latinx led, that was only a start. The thought all along is that this work needed to bring in a lot of allyship, as Maisha mentioned. So there are a number of key stakeholders that we're engaging with. And we know that this work, you know, we're starting with the communities that we saw through COVID being most disproportionately impacted. But as we address the needs of our Black and Latinx communities, we think that it'll start to lift all boats and address all these issues around inequities that exist in all communities, regardless of race, quite frankly, because we see inequalities in low-income white communities. But figuring out how to address these issues in those who have been marginalized, who have been most underrepresented, I think will allow us to then make the systemic change that will, quite frankly, improve the quality and outcomes for everybody.
Well, I think I'm not overspeaking for John and myself to say I think we might be part of that allied group. Certainly we'll be keen observers of what happens along the way with your proposed bill. So Juan Fernando Lepera, Maisha Minter-Jordan, on behalf of yourselves as well as the Health Equity Compact, we really appreciate your taking the time to chat with us today and give our audience an overview of what it is you guys are trying to accomplish. Thanks again for coming.
Thank you so much for having us. And we do consider both of you to be key allies. So we really appreciate the support and the ability to be here today.
Thank you.